Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. If you like detective stories, and a lot of people seem to, you'll recognize the names of Sue Grafton and her protagonist, Kinsey Milhone. Milhone is the plucky private eye who solved crimes from A to W in Grafton's alphabet series that began about 30 years ago with A is for Alibi. Her latest is just out and is titled W is for Wasted. And if you're like I am, you can't put one down without waiting impatiently for the next. I'm not alone. Over the years, Kinsey Milhone has become a favorite in 28 countries, read in 26 languages. There have been many awards for the author along the way. You'd think Hollywood or the networks would have bought a piece of the action by now, but Sue Grafton tells them to forget about it. Just one of the interesting parts of her story. Sue Grafton joins us in studio. I am so happy to meet you.
This is fun.
It really is. I've read every one of the books, and I just look forward to them. And I'm already waiting for X, so get busy.
So you've read W.
I've absolutely read W. And, you know, one of the things I noticed in this book is you've really taken on some very heavy subjects with homelessness, addiction, medical fraud.
Right.
Big issues.
Well, and I am apolitical. I am not selling anything. I look at the situation from a different perspective. I'm interested in the psychology of crime. So I'm not on one side or the other. And I think what I tried for, especially when it came to the homeless, was to present a balanced view. You know, it's in some respects, I think not everybody wants to pay a mortgage and pay the utilities. Some people like the freedom to come and go, so.
Well, that's just one of the issues. And if some of your characters have very serious addiction problems, alcohol primarily, another big issue in today's world.
Exactly.
Yeah. In your research, Sue, you spent a lot of time, obviously, looking at these things. I mean, the medical fraud aspect of your book, and we don't want to give away too much. Obviously. But the medical fraud aspect of the book obviously shows a tremendous amount of research. Tell us about how you go about that.
Well, it takes me a long time to decide what I'm going to be tackling in a book. I don't want to be topical. You know, I just look for things that are of interest to me. And when it comes to the drug companies, I don't think the drug companies are the big bad wolf. I don't. I think it's popular to view them as greedy, blah, 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 but that's just silly. So I did a lot of reading, and in this book I would give the bibliography because I had to do some serious studying up. And fortunately, in this day and age, you can go online and get a lot of information as well. So I had to do enough research that I felt comfortable. Also, I connected up with Dr. Don Miller at the James Brown Cancer Center in Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And he introduced me to some people that were very helpful.
Well, once again, we'll say that it's certainly another wonderful Kinsey Milhone book, and folks should look forward to it. We'll talk more about parts of it. But let me go back to my introduction and your disavowal of Hollywood. What is going on there? You could make a lot of money selling these
stories. No, I couldn't. And this is like a service I do for my readers because I worked in Hollywood for 15 years. I know what those people are like. They will say anything to you. It's like getting picked up in a bar. If you believe what the guy says, shame on you. They will tell you they love your work. They will tell you you'll have total control. They're so, you know, effusive. But the minute a dollar changes hands, all the power shifts. And truly, once you sign a contract, they can do anything they want with the character. So the story I tell is about Lawrence Block, who has a series about a white male Jewish burglar. They cast Whoopi Goldberg. Now, that says it all. And he had no grounds for objection.
What has your experience been in Hollywood? I know that's where you started. And the first years were, I guess, semi-lean.
Yeah. I started as a solo writer. I wrote three full-length novels that never got published. The fourth novel and the fifth novel were published. Novel number 6 and number 7 were never published. A is for Alibi was the eighth book I wrote. And actually, Hollywood gave me some good training. I learned how to get into a scene and how to get out of it, learned how to do action, learned how to handle dialogue. So I also learned I'm not a team player. I don't like to collaborate.
But, you know, the notion of taking on Hollywood, in those days, and it taught you a great deal, obviously. But what about the other part of it? I mean, you did things before you started writing that were quite different from your success.
I got into the medical field because I was an English major in college, and I had a minor in fine arts and a minor in humanities, which is to say I was unemployable. So I had to teach myself to type, and at that time there was there were two medical shows. That have just gone.
What years are we talking about?
We're back in the 60s.
Ben Casey, Dr.
Yes,
Kildare?
Yes, those are the very two. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that looks like fun. So I pretended I knew medical terminology, and I started working in doctor's offices. And I worked in hospitals. Loved that.
But then into the writing career, and there were some successes eventually. What do you think it is about you that caused you to persist in this? I mean, a number of those books weren't published, as you've noted.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, my father, you may or may not know, was a municipal bond attorney in Louisville, and his passion was mystery fiction. So when I was a kid, in the evenings, we would walk up to the Model Drugstore, what it was called, and you could get a used paperback for 25 cents. So my parents would come back with this huge stack of Mickey Spillane and God knows what else. And so I grew up on that.
But the point is, you didn't let go. A lot of people might have been, gone into something else, gone in another direction, but you didn't.
Yeah, I didn't expect to be a writer. I thought I would be a teacher. I knew I was too squeamish to be a nurse, and I was not trained to be a ballerina. So those two careers were out. But I did not think I would be a writer because people assured me you would be really poor. And I thought, I don't want to do that. You know, I'd like to have a steady income.
Well, there are a lot of people who want to be writers who are poor and who never make it. What would you tell a young person today? You know, we're associated with the university, and I'll bet you there are some people today, young and maybe not so young, who would love to be a successful writer. What advice would you give?
It takes plain old hard work. It takes tenacity. And the thing about writing is you have to actually write. You know, you have to sit down every day and write. And I know when I started out, I wrote badly for years, and I didn't know the difference. Many people starting out think their words are precious jewels. And what happens after a period of time when you read enough books about writing and read enough good books, you begin to see where you have fallen short. And at that point, you got a shot at it. As long as you think every word you utter is divine, you're in trouble.
Who did you in the early days show your material to? I'm not talking about potential publishers, but you know, folks you were close to. Maybe, gee, would you take a look at this and see what I'm doing?
I tended not to do that, and I don't do it to this day. Nobody reads my work when it's in progress. I look at writing as a pressure cooker. And I don't favor, I hate to say this, people send me hate mail. I don't like writers' groups. I think it makes the work homogenized. You know, it's nice, you read hers, she reads yours, everybody says that's so lovely. But I think it takes away from voice and tone and clarity. So I work in isolation, and it's painful. And it's a struggle, but that's what I do.
I saw something in getting ready for this broadcast. I saw something the other day in which you were taken to task for criticizing someone for self-publishing.
I did.
Well, what's your problem with that?
Well, it was the foot and mouth problem. I truly didn't mean to insult anybody. When I was coming up in the business, vanity presses were low on the totem pole. And as I said, I work in isolation. I wasn't paying attention. There are people self-publishing on the bestseller list making a lot more money than I am. But I did not realize that when I opened my big mouth and blurted out the fatal sentence. There was so much uproar about that. But I owned it. You know, I had to go online and issue a quite sincere apology. You know, I still think some self-publish, writing is crap, but that's not to speak to the people who are really doing well.
The whole business is changing to a very large degree right now, isn't it?
It's huge.
How do you look at it? We're talking about e-books and we're talking about the publishing world shrinking mightily. This is how you make your living. What are your thoughts about
that? Well, for one thing, since I have been in the business 31 years, maybe longer than that, the publishers have always cried poor. There has always been the doomsday, oh, the book is over, there's no such thing as a novel. And look where we are. I think reading is coming back, and I think it's about e-books, which are less expensive. They're with people who are comfortable with technology. It's just a better medium for a lot of people. So I'm out on tour right now. I'm looking at book after book after book. There are people who are stacking books up, and they're reading.
As far as the author is concerned, and I don't want to appear to be too personal here, but can you as the author make as much selling an e-book as you can selling A W Is for Wasted?
Yes. Of the e-book, I get 25% if you want to get down to numbers. And I get less than that on a hardback, but an e-book is not as expensive. And as you know, sometimes they're $10, $12. Here's the kicker. A.S. Route, the Amazon did a special a couple of weeks ago selling A through O for one day for $1.99. It put A.S. for Alibi on the bestseller list 31 years after I wrote it. I was never on the bestseller list back then.
And of the $1.99, what did you get?
Well, a penny, I think. But it gave me such a kick. And I know I picked up some readers who probably just thought, oh, heck, for $1.99, if I don't like her, who cares?
Who are your readers? Do you have a profile of your readers?
No, and the age range is grand. My youngest reader might be 11. But I have 92-year-olds, 94-year-olds, and it's very amusing. Like I had a woman who came to my signing wherever I was, which I've totally forgotten, 100 years old.
Wow.
And it was just great fun. So the thing I rejoice in is that my readers are nice, they are caring, they are friendly. They stand in line and make friends. I don't have stalkers. I don't have hateful, crabby, terrible people.
I think the people react that way because you've just drawn a wonderful character in Kinsey Millhone. I want to talk more about her and about I know you get the question all the time
about your
alter ego. So we'll get that out of the way when we come back. My guest is Sue Grafton. By the way, as you've been hearing here on St. Louis Public Radio, Sue will be talking about and signing W is for Wasted this evening at 7 at Maryville University's auditorium. It's part of the Maryville University's Maryville Talks book series. We'll have details on our website. If you'd like to go there and get more information, you can do so, stlpublicradio.org. Back in just a moment, and if you'd like to talk with Sue Grafton, please feel free to give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, and you can also send us a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with novelist Sue Grafton. Her latest book in the Alphabet series that many of you know, I'm sure, is W is for Wasted, just published a couple of days ago, actually. Sue, I alluded to the notion before the break that a lot of people think that you and Kinsey Millhone, your delicious character, are one and the same. Are you?
Yes, absolutely. There are some obvious differences. I have gray hair. I have three kids. I have four granddaughters. I've been married three times, as she has, but I've been married to the same husband now for 35 years, which is something she can't boast about. I did for 25 years jog, which is what she does now. Then my feet started breaking down, so now I do a lot of heavy walking.
Well, she doesn't have gray hair because she was born in 1950, mistaken on that. But you set your books in the 80s, mid-80s, essentially. Yeah. Why did you choose that particular time period?
It was by default. A.S. for Alibi was published in May of 1982. The story took place in May of 82. B took place in June of 82. C took place in August. And so book by book, I've been lagging behind. I must say, even at the time I came up with this foolhardy plan to do a book for every letter of the alphabet. I understood that having her age 1 year for every book was going to get ludicrous. She would be 63 by now, if not older. And whereas I think private eyes, there are certainly some fine ones in much older than that, in the noir, in the hard-boiled private eye tradition, generally they're young and tough.
Is anything taken away because of this from today's world? I mean, today's world of cell phones and tweets and all the rest of it, which she could probably use to some advantage, maybe not as a 63-year-old.
Yeah. I think it's provided me a wonderful opportunity to show detective work the old-fashioned way. She can't Google anything. She has to go down to the Hall of Records, she has to go down to the courthouse, and she has to look through files. And so her curiosity and her tenacity take her in a lot, very many different directions.
You say that it was a crazy idea to come up with the alphabet. How did that come about? What was the genesis of that?
Well, my father had written and published two mysteries of a projected 8-book series based on a British nursery rhyme. So he wrote The Rat Began to Gnaw the Rope, which won the Mary Roberts Reinhardt Award of 1943. Then he published The Rope Began to Hang the Butcher. And I knew about John D. MacDonald, who connected things through color, Harry Kimmelman, who did Days of the Week. So I knew from a publisher's point of view, it was nice to have a way to alert readers that a new book was out. So I was reading an Edward Gorey cartoon book called The Gashly Crumb Tinies. Edward Gorey does the little pen and ink drawings, and that particular book is a series of little Victorian children being done in various ways. So it was Amy, A is for Amy, who fell down the stairs, B is for Basil, assaulted by bears, and on it went. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool to write a series of detective novels using the alphabet and crime-related words?
And the rest, as they say, is history. But now you've got three left.
I know.
What happens when you finish with the Z?
Well, everybody's really worried about that already. It's taken me 2 years per book. So we got 6 years to work with. And I can tell that as the alphabet, as Z is for zero, approaches, I'm going to have to start doing therapy with people. Uh-huh. We're going to have little sensitivity groups and get used to the idea. My hope is that I will continue to write, and most certainly about Miss Kinsey Millhone, who rules my life. But I don't want to go on if the juice is gone. And that's, I have seen writers keep plugging along, trying to collect a paycheck. And as a reader, I'm going, don't do anymore. You know, stop while you're ahead.
Now, how far along are you? I mean, in your next one, do you know what you're going to be writing about? Do you have the plot line established?
No. I was going to ask you if you knew. Well, the next letter is X, which is kind of interesting letter, you know. I have a fragment of story, but
I know you're having some trouble. I've read some things indicating that you've looked at some words and that don't quite fit necessarily.
Yeah. Well, and at this stage of the game, I just whine and complain and wring my hands. And I've been thinking about this. It's kind of like doing a jigsaw puzzle. You dump it out of the box and you turn all the pieces over and you look for the corners. But if you don't have a picture, all you have are the bits and pieces. And if that's all you have to work with, you have to manipulate the bits and pieces till you see how they go together.
So in terms of your own planning, do you come up with a storyline first and then find a word that you can?
Sometimes. Yeah. It can also work the other way around. When I first dashed off a list of crime-related words according to the alphabet, I thought F was for forgery. I got down to the research, and forgery is such a boring crime. I mean, you can imagine the climax, somebody forging a signature, not too much fun. But the minute I found the word fugitive, you can hear the story in there. So some books come out of simple ideas. For instance, K is for Killer. I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do a book set entirely at night? So I had to go out in my little Nissan pickup truck and see what was happening after 9:30, which is my bedtime.
Mine too. Well, I'm going to give you the title, X is for X-ray.
No hyphens. And see, people have said xylophone, but xylophone is not a crime.
No.
So.
No. Oh, well, I'm sure you'll figure it out and you have plenty of time. I'm going to bring Jerry into the conversation. Okay. He calls from O'Fallon, Missouri, and is a frequent caller. Jerry, nice to talk to you again.
Good morning. I have to say I've been a fan of yours even before the first novel. I believe I read a short story about had to do with a shotgun.
Oh, Parker Shotgun.
Yes, and I think I got caught into it because you used the same name as the late Ross McDonald, Santa Teresa.
Yes.
And you've actually covered what I was going to ask about, and that was not staying contemporary. I'm a big fan of mystery fiction, and I think a lot of us read because it does offer a platform for social commentary, and it becomes very interesting as the time change. Various authors, including Ross McDonald, have been very good at their perception of what's going on, and when you read the books, they're almost like something you'd find, it's a very good description of the period.
Exactly.
But I have to say, in listening to your explanation, it does make sense because, I mean, Lew Archer came out in 1949. I believe the last book was published in 1976. Right. And he might have aged like 3 or 4 years in that time. But I guess you can, that's kind of an author's license.
Exactly. I was actually privileged enough to meet Ken Millar, Ross McDonald, a couple of times. I was not then a mystery writer, and he was getting into his dotage. But I can say I shook his hand, and that was good.
Well, yeah, he was one of the masters, as you are. And I have to say, I agree wholeheartedly with your take on writers' groups. I mean, can you imagine The Catcher in the Rye coming out unscathed?
I know. I always think about Tolstoy and Anna Karenina and the writing group going, oh, hon, you know, let's just don't do it. I don't think she should go under the train.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
It would ruin literature for most of us.
Yeah, I think it's a solitary exercise. I don't think there's anything you can do about that. And, you know, it's just you and a blank piece of paper or a computer screen, and you just have to make things up.
Exactly.
But anyway, you did an excellent job of it, and I'll continue reading.
Thank you, Jerry.
As long as you're writing.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Again, we have some lines open, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Come on in and talk to Sue Grafton. How lonely is the life of a writer?
I'm never lonely. I love being by myself. You know, I just think it is. I sit at my desk whether I need to or not. Now, the work itself is full of suffering, and I complain bitterly I have some days that are so magical. But here's what I claim. Like one day out of 30, I am so smart about break my arm, pat myself on the back. The other 29, I'm really stupid and confused and clueless. I don't know which day I'm going to be smart. So I have to sit there day after day after day, feeling stupid till I get to that one moment when I think I got it.
That would suggest to me that during this whole process, you may not necessarily know where you're going to be going at some point.
Well, a mystery novel is a very carefully structured piece of work. So I know there are some writers, Elmore Leonard among them, who claimed he would put two characters together and just see what they did. Mm-hmm. I don't have that much nerve or maybe that much skill. So I have to figure out beginning, middle, and end and make sure I've got enough story to fill 5 or 6 double-spaced pages of manuscript.
But do you find yourself at some point being led astray by characters or by situations?
I have ideas that don't work, and it's a very difficult thing the day I realize I've got to dump a book. I'll have 8 chapters written, and I can feel that it's not working. And there's this argument in my head because I don't want to give up the good work, you know. Mm-hmm. But I can tell when a book story isn't working, and there's no point in beating around with it.
How many times have you done that?
8, 10.
Really?
I did it with Ages for Homicide. I did it with Chaos for Killer, which I thought was Chaos for Kidnap. Chaos for Kidnap. I finally said to myself, kidnapping is a federal crime. The FBI is not going to ask Kinsey Millhone, small-time gumshoe, to come help them out. So out that went.
Let's go back to the phones. And Dave in Afton wants to talk to Sue Grafton. So go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
I just wanted to let Ms. Grafton know how much I appreciate her work. I just finished her whole series.
Wow.
Up until, well, I don't have the new one yet because I get my books from the National Library Service for the Blind.
Oh.
And they're, like, way behind. It's like, get them out when people put them out. Please.
Do call me Sue. We know each other so well.
All right. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
Sue, I'm Dave.
It must be
not really much interesting to say. I just wanted to let you know, again, how much I enjoy your work. And I think the thing I like about Kinsey is that she's not like a Jack Reacher type character. She's got, like, flaws.
Oh, yeah. I try to keep her flawed and inconsistent, and I don't want her to be anybody's role model. So she's not larger than life, and the fate of the free world never hangs in the balance. So she's just kicking along. I like her because she's unpretentious and down to earth and cusses like a sailor.
It's not the fact that she's flawed. It's the fact that she's sort of normal.
Yes, I hope. Well, people think she's bent, but you and I know better.
No, I don't think so. No. That's like a normal person.
Dave, thank you so much for the call. I would love to meet her. I mean, that's how much of an impression she has made on me. Just the kind of person that I know that I would like. And I've seen her described in some of the material, I guess, that preceded your book here as both adorable and naughty. Are those words that you would use for her?
Well, no, I wouldn't say adorable. And I don't like the word quirky sometimes. And feisty makes me crazy. Don't ever call her feisty.
I called her plucky. Did I make
plucky,
you mad?
No, plucky is cute. That sounds very British to me. But, she calls it like she sees it. And so what people get tickled about, and I don't set out to be funny, but she just tells you what's going on in her mind. And I think she voices some of the thoughts of the average person. And it's funny to watch her operate in the world.
Well, what about first-person writing these days?
It is a tricky business because if the first-person narrator is too egotistical or too full of herself, it will wear the reader down. So I have to work to keep a certain control of the tone so that I'm not getting obnoxious.
I've heard some people say that first-person writing is out.
But that's not true. I am.
Yeah, well,
people who make pronouncements about the state of publishing or the state of the novel or what's in and what's out, half of them don't know what they're talking about, and the other half are wrong.
Let's go back to the phones. Lucia, go ahead.
I've been a fan, and whenever I would talk about books, whenever I'm a random strange person, and I think I identify with Kinsey so absolutely solidly. We're kind of like solid related, unrelated people. I digress. Anyway, when you're looking at, when you see other people at the library, at a bookstore, and you're saying, you see a person in the mystery section. It's like, wait a minute. Have you read Sue Grafton's series? It's like, no. Do you like mysteries? Yeah. Have you ever read her? No. Oh, my gosh, what's wrong with you? You got to start off with Alibi, then you got to go with Bee with Burglar, and then I go through the whole series. And that is not the reason why I called. I just adore you.
Thank you.
And I wanted to tell you, in the back of my mind, I'm a closeted writer, which I have all these thoughts just flying through my poor little brain. And your statement about feeling stupid in your writing 29 days, well, you're feeling stupid, and then you're having that one day of being really smart. I was like, oh. Yes.
You thought you were just stupid every day, but trust me, and I've been at it 30 years. I'm 23 books into this series. I don't know quite what's going to happen with X, and in some ways it's nice to be out on the road because I don't have to deal with it till I get home.
Let me say one thing. I just wanted to tell you that was the best piece of writing advice I have ever heard in my entire life. And thank you so very much for saying it.
You're welcome, and be totally obedient. I am your literary dominatrix, and you must do as I say.
Woo-hoo!
Lisa is on uppers today. She calls every once in a while, and she's really into it. But the best, that is good advice to someone. You know, if you want to write, write.
Well, you know, writing happens on the page.
Yeah.
The book in my head is so perfect. It's amusing and textured and witty, and you start putting it on paper, and you go, what is this drivel, you know? So I know language well enough by now, and I still write bad sentences, really bad sentences.
Well, I find that hard to believe, having read so many of them over the years, but I'll take your word for it if that's the way you feel. Before we take our next break, let's bring in Rose. She's calling from Glen Carbon, Illinois. Rose, go ahead. You're on the air with Sue Grafton.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, and I want to thank Sue Grafton so much for all her books.
Thank you. I think
everybody who called in, just we just love Kinsey. We can't wait to see what happens with her and her family, how she's going to relate to them, and, you know, what trouble she's going to get into. So it's been a delight. I have all your books, and what I did before V is for Vengeance is I reread all of them.
Well, I hear that from a lot of readers. They go back and start at the beginning, go straight through it, and they'll do it two or three times, mainly because they're waiting for me to do the next book. So it's a good way to keep yourself occupied.
Okay, I wanted to tell you, what is so fun is to, for me also, is the setting. I just love the setting out there in California.
Ah.
And, you know, you can feel the ocean, you can smell it, the flowers, and that's great. And I wanted to let you know that I had my first Kentucky hot brown.
Oh, I'm going to tell you the calorie count. It's frightening.
Absolutely not. But the setting is great. Are you going to continue? I mean, that's where she's going to live. And do you get out there? Do you?
Well, I have a house in Santa Barbara, Montecito, and so we spend summer and winter in California. I wrote A is for Alibi when I was living in Columbus, Ohio, because my husband was getting his PhD at Ohio State, and I was enough distant from Santa Barbara that I could write about it a little more objectively. Now I'm kind of close to it, but I call myself the goddess of Santa Teresa because I control the weather, I control real estate, I control crime and punishment all by myself.
Well, it's all wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'll see you tonight. Rose.
Rose, thanks for the call. And she mentions tonight, I'll mention once again that Sue is going to be talking about her new book, W is for Wasted, this evening at 7 o'clock at Maryville University's auditorium. That's part of the Maryville Talks book series. And if you need more information than that, you can find it on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Back to continue this conversation with Sue Grafton in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Before we continue our conversation with Sue Grafton, we're discussing her book, W is for Wasted. Here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Both of Missouri's U.S. Senators Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt are commenting on the shooting at the Washington Navy Yard earlier this week. We'll also hear their thoughts on the prospect of a government shutdown later this year. And Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster is holding an urban crime summit at St. Louis University's new School of Law. The summit is focused on evaluating responses to crime in metropolitan areas, including St. Louis and Kansas City. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Just mentioning that shooting the other day in the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C., you deal with crime. Obviously, you spend a lot of time thinking about it. What are your thoughts about what is going on in our society today? There have been a half a dozen of these things already this year.
I know. It makes me happy. I'm still dealing with the 80s, which was a simpler time. One of the things, I mean, real-life homicide is so appalling. It is poorly motivated. It is poorly executed. And I think the public is probably frightened and frustrated. Fictional homicide is a very different critter. And my claim is that the conceit is that if you are murdered, it's because somebody had a pretty clever plot, a little devious plan. And not only that, but that there is someone who will move heaven and earth to see that justice is served in the real world. You know, a killer, a shooter like that gets shot dead. Where is the justice? There are 12, 13 people dead and no repercussion, not repercussion, but no way of making amends.
What is your own sense of justice and gun control? I mean, do you give this a lot of thought?
Yes. And I have my outlaw self and I have my good citizen self. I was burgled a year ago, and that I have given serious thought. Would I get a shotgun if I saw a guy removing panes of glass to crawl in my window and steal my silverware, which I love? Would I blast his butt off? And I'm hoping I wouldn't. But somebody said to me recently, make sure they're dead, because otherwise they're going to sue you.
Yeah, and make sure the gun is close by.
Exactly.
You don't have to run downstairs to get it before.
No, I have not bought a shotgun, and I can't picture ruining my wallpaper, but.
There's a gruesome thought of the bloodstains on the wallpaper.
Yeah,
what about capital punishment?
Oh, I tend to think there are some people who need to be removed. You know, they're just, I think there are evil people, and I don't say that in any godly, religious way. Just there are certain people who just don't have what the rest of us have. They're not connected to us.
Are there any characters that you've drawn that you really, really, really dislike?
No, I love my villains. Like when I did Tears for Trespass, there was a villain named Solana Rojas, whom I adored. She was so judgmental and superior, and she was just as crooked as the day is long. But I loved getting inside her head and looking at her view of the world. You know, she thought other people were stupid for falling for her shenanigans.
In any sense, is any of this therapeutic for you?
Sure. You know, I think good writing comes out of our dark side. And so this is my way of reconciling rage, my bent side. I get to act out in the most benign manner imaginable, and I get paid for it.
And that's a good part.
That's very good.
No question. Let's go back to the phones, and this time it'll be Chris calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Chris.
Hello, Mr. Marsh, Ms. Grafton. Nice to talk to you guys.
Don and Sue.
Yeah, Don and Sue, the Don and Sue team.
Don and Sue. Sue, we've listened to your books on tape all across the country on family vacation since I was a boy. We love Kinsey. She is such a great person. You've created
Thank you.
Her. She's awesome. My curiosity, when I was going to ask you about, was the audio narrator, because like I said, we've listened to them across the country. It's because we've been listening to them with books on tape, and I think she's one of the best of all the ones that we've ever listened to.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Judy Kay. Are you the Random House audio?
Right, exactly. And I was just saying, did you select her? Did you have to approve her? Or
yeah,
is there any backstory there?
Yeah, that was so far back in time. I believe I had a say in hiring her for the A is for Alibi, that reading. It took me 20 years to meet her, and she is a fabulously talented actress. She has won Tony Awards, most recently for Nice Work If You Can Get It, I think was it. She was in Cats. She was in many, many shows. And so we get together every once in a while, and I'm very privileged to have her as my reader, low these many years. People swear it's actually Kinsey Millhone.
That's another thing that's happening in the publishing industry, the talking books. They're becoming ever more popular and serve really a basic need. We had someone call before who had vision problems, for instance.
Yeah. Well, long-distance truck drivers love me. Yeah. What are you going to do? How are you going to keep from running off the road if you don't have something to keep you awake?
Back to the phones. Michael and O'Fallon, go ahead. You're on the air with Sue Grafton.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. And I like the idea of the A through now W books, but my question is, what comes after Z?
Well, Z is for zero. I tell you that flat out. And it's going to take me another 6 years. I will be close to 80, and I feel I should stop and do a self-assessment and see if I'm still in my right mind and still able to do these. These books are very hard work, and they're very grueling. And they get harder all the time because I'm competing with myself now. So I don't want to keep trucking on if it's over. So as a courtesy to you, I'm going to make sure I can still do the job properly. And if I can't, I'll hang it up. I'll miss you, though.
Appreciate it.
I think it's important for someone of our age, we're contemporaries, to have something to do. Do you think that this is, I mentioned therapy a little while ago, but in terms of getting up every morning
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, writing and Kinsey Millhone and these books are what give my life structure and meaning. When I'm in the middle of a book, it's like, please let me get to the end. Please let me get to the end. I get to the end for about 3 days. Woohoo, happiness. You know, go to the, take a nap, go to the grocery store in the middle of the day. At day four, I'm going, that's it? That's what life is about? I don't think so. So then I get back to work.
You know, we were talking off the air about your husband. You've been married 35 years or so,
yes,
I think you said. Tell us a little bit about him, because this is, I'm a little bit surprised at what he does, given what you do.
My husband teaches at University of California, Santa Barbara. He teaches philosophy of physics, philosophy of space and time, and philosophy of quantum mechanics, and he taught himself quantum mechanics so he could understand it.
Well, doesn't everybody
I know.
Teach themselves quantum mechanics?
I know. I can barely add and subtract. He's just fabulously smart. He loves gardening. He's just a treasure. And plus, he puts up with all my whining and hand-wringing.
But what are the conversations like around the household? Is it quantum mechanics or Kinsey Millhone?
No, we talk about what all married people do. You know, did you take the garbage out? Did you pick up the cleaning? You know, life in my life takes place at a very basic, simple level. We do talk about literature. Sometimes he'll talk to me about what he's doing. I have no clue. I just try to nod and look like I get it.
But you collaborated at one time, as I understand
yes.
it, on us on doing it. Well, you tell
We've
us about it.
We worked in Hollywood together for 8 years, and looking back on it, I marvel that we survived it. When he got his degree in philosophy of physics, I said, you are now qualified to come work in Hollywood with me, because you always need somebody to watch your backside. He's very quick. I mean, his shadow side is very prominent. But he is not an experienced writer, so where we would get into conflict, he could come up with answers. He could come up with lines of dialogue that were fabulous. But when it came down to putting beginning, middle, and end together, that was not his strong suit. And I did pull rank. I was hopelessly mean to him. But we made it through, so that's good.
How much different is writing screenplays and writing novels?
Writing the novel is much more difficult because you can't cheat. With a screenplay, you can say exterior Baghdad day. I don't have to go to Baghdad. You know, somebody else will figure out what that scene, there's a set dresser and, you know, the photographer and all that. So if you write a novel, you better know what you're talking about, and you have to know far more than appears on paper.
But what were some of the projects that you were involved in in the Hollywood
days? We did a project called Killer in the Family with Robert Mitchum. We did Love on the Run with Stephanie Zimbalist and Alec Baldwin. That was wonderful. That was based on a case in Tennessee where a criminal attorney fell in love with this guy in prison, busted him out, and they traveled the country together. So that was fun.
Are these projects that you would bring to a producer or someone, or did they come to you?
They would come to me. Oh. And, you know, the thing about Hollywood is there was always somebody, I called it taking their fine gold pencils to my work. I would write my heart out, and then you'd go into a meeting, and they would unravel the whole thing. And sometimes they had good ideas. I don't, you know, I'm not so precious that I think everything I do is perfect. But I just don't write by committee. It's not my style.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the program that you like to work alone.
I do.
And who are the people who have the gold pen? I mean, are they the money people, or are they the producers,
or
the director?
Yeah, producers and network execs. And the irony is that they're smart. They're well-educated. They always give you a cup of coffee, and then they ruin your work. I'm thinking, I don't like that.
How about the actors, the Robert Mitchums and the Alec Baldwins of the world?
I love actors. I do. Often they bring something entirely new to a project. But another reason I don't want to sell the rights to Kinsey Millhone, they'd miscast it. Half my readers would be up in arms. And every time I sat down to write another book, I'd picture Joe Doakes or whoever they miscast in the part. It would ruin it for me.
Who would you choose?
I wouldn't.
Oh, come on. You must have somebody.
No, I do not. You'll never get me to commit myself to that.
I thought we were going to make some news here today. Let's go back to the phones. Carolyn joins us from Baldwin. Carolyn, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering where you got the idea for the peanut butter and pickle sandwiches.
Peanut butter and pickle. And please, no, it has to be bread and butter pickles and Jif extra crunchy peanut butter.
Oh, I thought it would be creamy.
No, well, you can. I'm going to leave some of that to you.
The crunchy makes a difference.
Yeah, I grew up on those, and as I travel across the country on book tours, there are people who will say to me, oh, how did you get into that? Because there are certain people who are raised on them the same way I was. So,
well, I never heard of them before I read the Kinsey book.
Well, people cautiously tiptoe into the notion of a peanut butter and pickle sandwich, and not everybody takes to it, but that's my go-to snack if I'm feeling down or blue.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good to know.
Carolyn, give it a try.
Thank you.
Let me ask Carolyn, stay there for a moment. You still there?
Yes.
Let me ask you, do you have a little black dress?
No, I don't.
I ask that because I get a kick out of that particular part of these stories. Kinsey's little black dress you can wear anywhere.
Well, I own that dress.
She wears it. Lasts for years.
Yeah, exactly. Carolyn, I own that dress. I bought it in Columbus, Ohio in 1978 for $98, and it's still in my closet. And I think if you prorate it, it's pennies on the dollar for that.
Probably so. It was a good investment.
I think so.
All right.
Carolyn, thank you so much for the call. Another question about process, Sue Grafton, is now on your 23rd book, and this goes over 31 years or so, how do you go back and make sure that everything is sequential and the right way it should be in terms of her life and the people in her life?
I've had some goofs in there, and I don't know which book. In one book, I claimed that Henry Pitts, Kinsey's landlord, had never been married. And in another book, I go through the wives. And I can't figure out which way I erred. And there was that terrible error in B is for Burglar, for which I have gotten 699 letters because she's going down into a very dangerous situation. Parks her car, says, I left the keys in the ignition so I could make a hasty getaway. She's down in the basement. The bad man's coming. And she's picking at a screw with a set of keys. Now, loyal readers will claim she had two sets, but actually it was my error.
Do you get a lot of feedback from readers?
Always. And to go back to your question, I keep elaborate charts of each of the books, and I keep journals for each book that I write. Plus, I go back and read them in sort of random order because I need to know what I said.
Yeah, there's been an awful lot happened over those 23
exactly.
books that sometimes little things that, that could come back to haunt you. Our time is starting to get away. Tell me about tours like this. You're on a big tour. You're going to how many 20 cities or something like that. Whatever it is. What's that life like?
It is a wonderful way to interface with my readers. I have a personality that I put in place that goes out. You know, I'm generally an introvert, but when I'm on the road, it is about other people. It isn't about me. I'm exhausted. My hair is always funny, and I never know where I am. But when I go into a book signing, it's about those readers. They have paid a lot of money for books. They have been loyal for years and years. They've made converts for me. And so when I do a signing, I spend time with everybody. We get pictures taken. It's great fun.
I imagine that part of the game is going to change, too. It's expensive to send someone like you out on the road for a couple of weeks.
Right. And I don't know. I know they're cutting back on tours. And maybe sometimes you can do those satellite tours where you sit in a room with a bowl of fruit and they plumb in Pittsburgh and far cities.
Including Paramus, New Jersey, which is one of your stops. Having grown up in New Jersey, I don't envy you that particular location, but I'm sure you'll enjoy yourself. Sue Grafton, it's been great having a chance to meet you and
nice
talk to you.
Nice to meet you.
And again, I enjoyed the book, W is for Wasted. It's the latest in the series, the 23rd of the series, Kinsey Milhone and the Alphabet series. Good luck tonight at Maryville University, 7 o'clock in the auditorium there. Folks, if you need more information about that, you can check our website at stlpublicradio.org. Sue Grafton, thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Continued
Marsh.
Success. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the Normandy School District's efforts to regain accreditation. And looking ahead to next week, on Thursday, September 26th, we'll convene our monthly legal roundtable in the courtroom of the new St. Louis University Law School downtown. If you'd like to be part of the audience on that day, plan on arriving by 11:30 for the noon broadcast. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.